welcome along to the Pastor's Heart. It's great to have you with us. Dominic Steele is my name. I've just been away for the last couple of days up in country New South Wales, and it's been really good to talk to different Christian ministry leaders there about how they've benefited from being involved in watching and interacting with what we're doing here on the Pastor's Heart. Of course, we're on Facebook each week and our website, thepastorsheart.net. Lots of people tuning in through the podcast, through the catch-up audio. We're getting tremendous encouragement from those people over in Clayton TV in the UK who are watching us there. And pretty recently, we've been joined by the Anglican Cable Network from Nigeria and broadcasting right across Africa and really into half of Europe. And we're attempting to serve Christian leaders all over the place. Today, my guest is Craig Hamilton. He's the author of this excellent book, Wisdom and Leadership. The how and why of leading the people you serve. It's available from MatthiasMedia.com. This copy is, well, I just picked it up from the desk of one of my staff members upstairs. My copy is far more dog-eared, far more scribbled all over, because it is such a helpful book. And if you haven't got a copy, if your team hasn't got a copy, you want to get one of those for them. Now, Craig, welcome along. It's great to have you.
Dominic, thank you.
Now, the default is to talk to you about leadership skills, but I want to start actually with the heart of the pastor. Because you're saying that's actually the most important thing rather than the skill.
Right, yes, yeah. That's right.
And what are the big problems? Pride, fear?
Yes, both of those. I mean, I think the issue is often when it comes to leadership and leadership skills, we think the main problem that we have is we don't know the skills. But really, even after you've learnt the skills, often it's the heart that's still going to get you into trouble. In particular, I think pride and fear.
Mm-hmm. So how do people come a cropper there?
Of their pride, of their fear?
Mm.
Well, I mean, I think it comes out in lots of different ways. I think that's the thing. Pride and fear are both sneaky sins, and they'll find their way out in lots of different avenues, lots of different ways, which is why I think leading ourselves is the most important person we need to think about when it comes to our leadership.
Okay, so I'm leading myself. What do I need to be careful on there?
Well, there's so many. You need to think about not just all the things that you're doing, because all the things that you do are all going to be filtered through who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you lead anyone, it's all going to come out of you, which means that those things about you, those areas in your life where your maybe leadership's not on point about you, it's going to impact everyone else.
So what if I do want to do the analysis? What kind of thing would you recommend I do? Yeah. To do the pulse check,
There's a chapter in the book, a great book by a local author.
I'll wave it here again, MatthiasMedia.com.
There's a chapter in there on self-leadership, and in that chapter I have 14 self-leadership questions that I ask myself.
Okay, we'll put them up on the screen. If you're listening on the podcast, we'll talk about a few of them. Keep going, these 14 points.
Yes, I ask these of myself relatively regularly, maybe every 3 to 4 months or so. I'll sit down and I'll just think through these questions and just check where things are up to.
So I did it on the plane this afternoon, looking through, I mean, is my character submitted to Christ? Is my commitment solid? Is my vision clear? Is my passion hot? Is my pride subdued? Are my fears in their place? Is my own personal baggage in check? Is my pace sustainable? Is my zeal to serve developing? Is my heart for God increasing? Is my capacity for loving people deepening? Am I playing to my strengths? Am I still learning? Does my family recognize me? It all felt a little bit too painful and close to home to me.
It's a lot of questions, isn't it? It's a lot of questions. And some of them are very hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're so important. If you get these things wrong, then lots of other things down the line will get impacted as well.
Mm-hmm. What about, is my pride subdued? That seemed to be the one you zeroed in on.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think the reason why I like to put that one as its own is because pride is just such a sneaky sin that it needs, in my life, it needs its own special focus, because I can easily ignore it or scooch around it when in fact it's my main issue.
So I reckon you might have had a special temptation on this. I mean, here you are, the guy who's written the leadership book, you know, and people come and say, this is a great, I mean, I've just come and said, this is a great book, been super helpful.
Yeah.
And what does that do? How does that mess with your head? Do you know? Where
yeah.
It happens again and again and again. What do you do to work on that?
One of the main things that I do is whenever I talk to anyone about leadership or when I speak somewhere, I always make sure I'm very deliberate and very detailed in describing all of the things that we're doing wrong in my ministry today.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, just because I wrote the book doesn't mean that it's all going 100% well, and mm-hmm. there are mistakes that I still make and I'm still learning, and I make sure that's front and center.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. You talked about four concrete areas that we need to think about.
Yeah. Yep. When it comes to pride and fear, I think the first one is how that impacts culture.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second one is when it comes to leading ourselves. We've already talked mm-hmm. about that, leading the hardest person. Mm-hmm. The third one is when it comes to ministry distribution, handing over ministry mm-hmm. to others. And then lastly, it's then the decision-making clarity that's needed for when we hand over.
So let's do culture.
Sure.
Yeah. What's your issue there?
Well, I think in one sense...
It's the culture of the church, isn't it?
Yeah. We're thinking church culture. We're thinking any organization has a culture, families, mm-hmm. schools, businesses, churches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the bit that's hard to quantify, hard to define. When I say culture, what I mean is the attitudes, values, unwritten rules, behaviors that then manifest in the church.
Mm-hmm.
It's just how we do things around here.
Mm-hmm.
That's culture.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that kind of gets... The reason why that's so important is because we have processes in our churches and we have culture. Processes are things like preaching, small groups, finances, baptisms, weddings, funerals, hospital visits.
Organizational stuff.
Yeah, the things that we do. And then you have culture, which is more how we do the things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything that we do comes out of and is impacted by the culture of our church, just mm-hmm. how it works around here. Now, the issue is you can have smart processes or you can have stupid processes. You can have healthy cultures or you can have toxic, unhealthy cultures.
So in a church, what's a toxic culture as opposed to a healthy culture?
Well, a healthy culture might be something like there is freedom to do things, there is candor and truthfulness when we speak to each other. There is low politics, low backstabbing, those kind of things. That would be a healthy church culture. A toxic church culture would be then the opposite. It would be low levels of trust, high levels of politicking. It would be people not wanting to stay around, people not knowing whether someone's telling me the truth or not. All those kind of things lead to a toxic culture.
Mm-hmm. Healthy?
Yeah, and so healthy is the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy is the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
It's highly appreciative.
Good morale, highly appreciative.
High morale, yeah. Lots of trust, truthfulness.
So I want to work at that church, not the other one.
Right.
How do I get there?
Well, again, it starts with the leader. It starts mm-hmm. with the self. Because in one sense, it's the leader who's going to set the culture for their ministry, for their church. It starts with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I sense that my church might have some toxic cultural elements, the first place I need to look is to do that hard, difficult questioning of, is it in me?
Mm-hmm.
And if it is, then I need to start the work here. Before we start to think about anyone else or how we do things, it's got to start with me.
Now, without naming names, I mean, what you've just said to me, you've said in a different number of places. I presume you've had some conversations with people who've said, you know, as I went and reflected, I think you were right. I think I've got to change this area of my character. And I'm hoping that that will then trickle down into the church. Give us a couple of examples.
Well, I mean, I think there's so many. I mean, I think this is a lot of churches because, not because a lot of churches are bad, but because a lot of people are normal. Mm-hmm. A lot of leaders are normal. And we've all got our issues, and pride is going to be at play in every mm-hmm. one of us, you, me, mm-hmm. all of us. And so, you know, there was one church where there was high levels of politics in the sense of we came to the meeting, no one said what they really thought. We just all agreed and said whatever had to be said for the meeting to happen. And then we all left, and then we had the meeting after the meeting
mm-hmm.
where we were in the car park, in the hallway, and we said what we
really thought
should have said in the meeting.
Yeah.
But we said it in the hallways and in the car parks. And that kind of thing is that's a toxic, destructive kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one church like that. And I think that would be a lot of churches. That would be a lot of meetings.
Mm.
Another one was a place where, I mean, I guess it's a similar kind of thing where you couldn't speak the truth. People were more afraid of the response from the boss than they were about dealing with the actual problem that was happening in their church. They were more afraid of him than they were afraid of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem.
So how do you run a staff meeting that works to create that kind of... How do you be the leader that has the staff meeting, that has that kind of culture?
Right. This is hard. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It takes humility.
Yeah.
It takes maybe a bit of vulnerability from the leader. It takes... being able to say to the team, perhaps I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. All those things are hard. And the reason why they're so hard is because pride.
Mm.
And there'll be other things too. You know, you need to be able to create this space where we can speak the truth and no one gets in trouble for saying what they really think. And that's very hard. Because sometimes you do it by accident.
Mm.
You punish people for saying what they think, not intentionally, but just unthinkingly.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard.
What's an idea? I'm just thinking about the size of the team. As I think about our staff team, we've oscillated in size mm-hmm. over the year. I mean, we oscillate in size even during the year, depending on who's away and who's not there. But when everyone's there, and all the student ministers as well, there's 14 or 16 of them.
Yeah.
And actually, it's very hard to be vulnerable in front of 16 people, to be really vulnerable in front of 16 people.
Yeah.
Whereas much easier to be vulnerable in front of 4 or 5 people.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. Sometimes it's not, though. Sometimes it's the opposite. It's easier to be vulnerable in front of more of a crowd.
Yes, I can be vulnerable preaching.
Right. Than it is to be like us. But I think one of the keys to the vulnerability puzzle is being able to say things like, you're better at that than I am.
Mm-hmm.
Can you show me how you do that? I need your help.
Right.
That kind of vulnerability. And if I say that to you, I know that you won't think I'm not as good, or that there's no sense that I might be kicked out of this team just because you're better at something than I am.
Right.
If we can have that kind of trust, then our team is on the way
mm-hmm.
to having a healthy culture.
Other hints? I mean, that's really helpful.
I mean, another one would be in the staff meeting, just to make sure that you kill the meeting after the meeting and that you kill the meeting before the meeting. We don't need to meet before the meeting to work out what we'll say in the meeting. In the meeting, we'll just say what we think. And then we need to make sure that after the meeting, there's no meetings about what they said or what they chose, what they did, because they is us. And so as the leader, being able to maybe even say to the team, you know, I don't want to have meetings after the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to say what you think when we're here. Otherwise, what's the point of doing this?
Mm.
That'd be another tip.
Yeah. You've written a line, culture change is modelling plus consistency plus normalising plus communication plus time. Give me that.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. Changing a culture is very hard, very complicated. It's, you know, it's like the processes are often easier. I'll just do the preaching and do the hospital visit and work on the financial system because I get that. The culture stuff, it's soft, it's not objective, I'm not really very familiar with it, but it's just very hard. So to change the culture, it's trying to simplify a very complicated thing, that it starts with me, that's the modeling.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to be consistent. I can't be modeling inconsistently.
Yeah.
So I need to be, it needs to become how I am. And then it needs to be normalized in our church, in mm-hmm. our group. It needs to be how, this is how we do it.
Does it mean you can't have vigorous debates?
Oh, it means that you should have vigorous debates.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be a good sign of a healthy culture, that we can all say what we think, disagree with each other, but still be friends, still respect each other, still be on the same page, on the same team. Having robust conversations is a sign of a healthy culture.
Cool, okay. Keep going. I interrupted you.
Normalizing communication. You need to be able to say, this is now what it's like around here.
Uh-huh.
And then time. It just takes time.
Mm-hmm. What's a shadow impulse?
Yes, the shadow impulse, firstly, you need to know what the impulse is.
Yeah.
The impulse is most of us get into ministry, leadership, because we love people and we love the ministry. We love seeing people grown and loved and converted and helped and cared for through teaching and ministry. That's the ministry impulse.
Mm-hmm.
The shadow impulse is when I want and love to see people loved, cared for, converted, helped through teaching and ministry done by me. And it's just those last little bits, done by me, that's the shadow impulse. It looks, from the outside, almost the same as a normal, healthy ministry impulse. I want to see people helped and loved and converted and cared for and ministered to. But when it becomes by me, then it's a destructive impulse, because what I'm wanting is it's only me who can do the ministry. It's only me who can do the preaching, the converting, the conversations, the pastoral caring. It has to be done by me, which then constricts the
ministry. We can only grow so big.
We can only grow so big. There's only so much of me. There's only so much of what I can do. But it's so sneaky, because it looks and feels just like a regular, healthy ministry impulse, except done by me.
And I look around and I think lots of my peers and lots of my elders have massively struggled with that.
Yeah. This is, again, I think it's, in one sense, it's normal. I think it's in all of us. I think the seed of the shadow impulse is in all of us. It's in you, it's in me. But the question's not, you know, is it in me? Because the answer is, it is.
Yeah.
The question is, am I feeding it? Am I watering it? That's the question.
So how do I distribute ministry then?
Yes. Well, I think there's lots of reasons why we do and why we want to, because we can do more, the kingdom, there's more work to be done, more people helped.
Yeah.
But some of the reasons why we don't is because, A, what if the person that I distribute this ministry to is not as good at it as I am? That's the high likelihood that they won't be, because I'm the professional. I've been doing it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if they're not going to do it as well as me, maybe I just won't hand it over.
Yeah.
Number two, but then what if they're better than me? What if the first time I ask you to do something, on your first try, you're better than I am? And then what does that say about me? And why are they paying me? So that's number two. Maybe we don't distribute because what if they're going to do a better job? Mm-hmm. Number three is there are some things I just like doing.
Yep.
Number four is, well, it takes a long time to distribute.
Yep.
Because it's hard.
It's harder. Yep.
So what we need to do is, when we distribute in ministry, make sure we distribute the responsibility and also the authority. And both of those things have to be handed over, responsibility and the authority.
Okay.
If you just hand over the responsibility...
Now, I think you're taking us into a quadrilateral, aren't you?
This is the ministry distribution quadrilateral.
So those of you listening to us on the audio podcast, if you are watching us, well, we're about to put an image of the ministry quadrilateral up on the screen. But we're going to try and talk it through as we do it on the screen here. So tell us about the quadrilateral, Craig.
Okay, so if we hand over no authority and no responsibility, then we're not building leaders, we're going to build followers. Mm-hmm. That's obvious. But if we go and we distribute authority but no responsibility, what we're going to be creating is a tyrant, someone who has all the authority but no responsibility.
Yeah.
That's not a leader. Alternatively, we could hand over the responsibility but not hand over the authority. This one's much more common. But when we do that, we're still not building leaders. We're building, I think, a scapegoat. Someone who's going to be responsible but with no authority. But if we want to build leaders, we need to hand over the authority and the responsibility, because that's what it means to be a leader.
Okay. Well, they're either going to do it really well or they're not going to do it really well.
Yeah.
What if I get it right? What if I give the responsibility and I give the authority and they muck it up?
Yes, which is highly likely.
Okay, so help me.
Yeah.
Because that's why I'm frightened of doing it.
Well, that's right. That's right. That's why it's so hard. So it could be that there's an issue with me. It could be that...
I didn't brief them properly?
I didn't brief them properly. I didn't help them. I didn't explain what I was wanting. It could be that.
Yeah. I'm tempted to give them the authority and the responsibility and then check in every day.
Yes. Yes. Which may be helpful. It may not be helpful. It depends on who this person is.
So you're not saying to me, give them the responsibility and authority and then don't check?
Yes. Don't... And then just give it and then walk away.
Yeah.
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
So we don't want to do that. But we also... So it could be I didn't hand it over well. That's highly likely. I should check myself. Mm-hmm. But what if I did and they just didn't do a good job, but it was fine. It just wasn't great.
Yeah. Which is actually probably the situation in many ministries where both staff and volunteers have been asked to do different tasks.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably okay, but not the best. Yeah. Not as good as I could do.
And well, I'm not going to take us to the next level. Not. Yeah. I mean, part of the reason of delegating it is so that we will grow.
Yeah.
So that I'm not doing the, I've got to do it all.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So it could be that I need to trust the person to fix their mistake. Because that's important. That's how I trust me. When I give myself things that I need to do, I don't trust me to never make a mistake. I trust me to fix my mistakes when I make them.
Yeah.
So it could be that. But it might be that I need to be a bit more nuanced in how I hand over the responsibility and the authority. It doesn't have to be black or white, on or off, you have it all or you have none. We can grade that over time, which is another decision-making clarity idea.
Yep.
Is this a quadrilateral that we have?
We don't, but tell me about it. Yeah.
Okay, so we need to think, when we're handing things over, this is what I do with my teams. We'll sit down and we'll literally write out the decision-making authority that they have into four quadrants or four areas.
Yep.
The first one is, here are the things that you can just do.
Yep.
Don't even talk to me about it. You can if you want to, but just go and do these things.
Yep.
They're yours. The second category are things that you can just go and do and you need to report to me about them regularly.
Yep.
Whatever that is, once a week, once a month, once a term, whatever we think,
yep,
regularly. The third category is, here are the things that you can just do, but you need to report to me immediately.
Uh-huh.
Send me a text, send me a Facebook message straight away, but just do it. And then the fourth category, here are the things that I didn't want you to think about until we talk first.
Okay. All right. So give me a ministry area and give me a couple of decisions under those.
Yep.
Those things.
Let's think youth ministry.
Okay.
So the things that you might be able to just do is you can turn up, unlock the door, put things out, talk to your leaders, tell the leaders what time we're going to come, communicate. Just do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. Maybe the things that you would do and report regularly about are, if there's some leadership training that we're going to do, that you're going to do.
Yep.
Great. Do that and just report to me regularly how it went. Maybe report to me immediately if there's a high schooler who breaks their leg on a Friday night. Fix it. You have to call me. Call the ambulance. Do what you need to do. But then send me a text immediately, because on Sunday, someone's mum is going to have a conversation with me, and I need to know.
Yeah. Or perhaps before.
And then things that we might need to think about. If you want to change anything to do with our strategy, what we're trying to do.
I thought you were going to say if you want to have a bonfire on Friday night.
If we want to have a bonfire in the church auditorium, let's talk about that first.
Okay, right.
And so then what then helps the leader to do is they now have clarity on what they can do and what they can't. And it means that they have more confidence to then do those things without doing the wrong thing.
And you reckon kind of every role that I give somebody a responsibility and authority for, there's going to be areas in those four categories kind of linked to.
Yeah.
It's worth having that four... You would have that four-category discussion as part of the kind of assigning someone to a role.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Unless the role is very simple.
Right. But help me with welcoming team.
So that's as in like someone who's at the door, handing out the flyers, saying hi to people.
Well, we've given them the vision of we want people to feel welcomed, you know? And so, I'm thinking moving the coffee machine might be talk to me about it first, handing out the flyers. I mean, Father's Day, Mother's Day, we decide to give people presents at the door or something like that. You probably put that in one of the middle ones, the two or three.
That's right. And this is the thing. These four categories, this is a dynamic
thing. But actually, thinking about the process of where the limits of your authority and responsibility, that's really what you're doing. You're thinking about the process of where the limits of authority and responsibility fall.
That's right.
The person who's organising advertising, you can choose the posters, but I want to see them first. Do you know?
Right.
You can come to me before you spend money. Do you know?
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, good. I'm there now.
Yep. And the reason why is because people want to do a good
job
basically. Yep. Most people. There's probably one or two who want to do a bad job, but generally speaking, people want to do a good job. And so then you just want to help them to know that they're doing a good job, because you want them to make decisions and be confident and do the tasks.
Great. Thanks very much for coming in this afternoon. My guest this afternoon has been Craig Hamilton. He's on the team at Glenmore Park Anglican Church. He's the author of Wisdom in Leadership and The How and Why of Leading the People You Serve. Great book, available from MatthiasMedia.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week on The Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.